Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Warning.
The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
It's sex therapy time and relationship therapy time, as always. A little ears warning. And remember, you can catch this chat on our podcast after the show. This week, it's time to answer your questions, which have come into us at jen@rte.ie. I'm delighted to be joined by our resident sex therapist, Rachel Cook. Good morning, Rachel.
Hiya, Jen. How's it going?
Good. We always get a lot of questions in when we do a Q&A. We're going to try and get through as much as we can this morning. The first email I had in, it says, thank you so much for the programme. I have, this texter says, or emailer, a very jealous wife, also with mental health issues, including OCD. I don't see anything wrong with healthy porn. And she even wants to record it sometimes, but we are breaking up at the moment because, but I still love her. We have a fantastic love life, but jealousy and controlling issues, including porn, has caused untold damage. I need advice. There's a lot in there.
I'm not totally clear what the person is asking, but I would say, you know, for the overall, the amount of stuff that's going on there, you know, that the person who's messaged in hasn't said anything about their part in this. So they've basically just blamed their wife. It sounds like there's quite a lot of communication issues going on there. So I would say absolutely go to therapy together. You know, this is your wife, and you know, this person is saying that they're breaking up at the moment, but they still love her.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's no time like that to go to therapy, both separately and together, especially if you still see there being a chance to, you know, to be able to have a better relationship with each other. So, yeah,
go to therapy. There's a lot going on in that message, but you did say you still love her, so go to therapy. Hi, Jen. I heard you discussing sex positions, women on top, and why it goes soft. Lol. This person says, in my experience, it's all to do with the angle. She often goes too far back and it feels like my Mickey is going to snap off. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. I mean, definitely for some people with penises, leaning too far back can lead them to feel like their Mickey's going to snap off.
Don't lean back, girls.
Don't be leaning back too much, or at least ask the person with the penis if that's all right.
Good one. Hi, was just wondering if you could ask Rachel a question for me. I've been with my partner for nearly 6 years. We're engaged. We have two kids and we're meant to get married next year. I've always had paranoia issues. And over the past couple of months, my partner has actually left me a few times. I seeked help before, but got the wrong advice and help. She has put up with this for at least 4 years of our relationship, continuously telling me, I need to see a counsellor. I have now spoken to a counsellor a few times. And I'm just curious to know, can counsellors fix the issue of paranoia, and are relationships fixable after the stress paranoia causes? We are both madly in love and both want to work it out. I feel I've just pushed her to an edge this time and looking for advice for the sake of our children.
Oh, I mean, I'm really feeling for that person. You know, paranoia is thinking and feeling like you're being threatened in some way, even if there's no evidence or very little evidence that you are. You know, I would say to this person, absolutely commit to seeing an experienced therapist weekly. Paranoia is usually related to the fear of being hurt or losing someone or something you care about, but to an extreme degree. It's exhausting for the person experiencing the paranoia, and it can lead to very controlling behavior, which can be extremely tiring for a partner, and it can be traumatic for them because the accusations and demands can become abusive. So I would say to this person, you know, you have a responsibility to yourself, your partner, and most definitely your kids to get very consistent support, very specialized support
experience,
from people who
yeah.
experience working with paranoia. You know, paranoia is not a it's not a diagnosis in itself, but it's often a symptom of other things that are going on, which could be related to using substances. It could be to do with having, you know, maybe paranoid schizophrenia or different types of disorders. So I would say absolutely get that help for yourself.
And
your
side
partner.
Note, how would one go about finding that experienced counsellor? Is there like a website, or do you just go to your GP? How do people do that?
I mean, some people have great GPs who will refer them, but I would say on the whole, you know, these days there are just so many directories out there, and most of them, some of them are, you know, not super up to date. You might find you have to message quite a few people before you find someone who has availability. Sometimes the person might not even be that active on that website, but in general, there are loads of directories out there now in Ireland, all over the world, because now, you know, it's so accessible to do online therapy as well, which is not suitable for some people, but, you know, it's better, definitely better than none, depending on your geographical location and if you can find someone specialized. So just do a Google search for therapists and make sure to search for someone, especially if you have something that is kind of more specific in that way, who has experience in that area, rather than going to, let's say, a general counsellor who might have only had, you know, they might be a wonderful counsellor, but if they've only had a couple of years of training, they probably won't have gone into, you know, more deep and severe issues like paranoia.
Hi, Jen. Is calling your partner daddy in bed a normal or common trend? Thank you.
Oh, well, it depends what you mean. It's reasonably common, but that doesn't mean you have to do it if it makes you feel uncomfortable. You know, a lot of men have seen it in porn and think that women like it. And it's not just about women. It can be people of all genders. It can give the person who wants to be called daddy a feeling of power, control, dominance, importance. It can be a reinforcement of that person's masculinity. And some people are freaked out by it because, yes, daddy does mean father. But I suppose in sexual relationships, the word daddy has sort of changed meaning. It's included under sort of dominant and submissive relationships, you know, so it's sort of more like calling the person boss, master, or even sir, which some people love playing around with and find really fun, and they can have, you know, quite specific boundaries about it, and just can be a bit of a laugh. For other people, they find that deeply uncomfortable, gross, and really don't want to do it. And there are definitely quite a lot of people who believe that all women want to call their male partner daddy. So have a chat about it. Don't feel obliged to do it. But if you find it fun, check out with the other person whether they're up for it and enjoy yourselves.
Okay, another one. I was seeing a girl for 6 months. It was amazing. Both in our 30s. We shared a lot. She did and said things I suggested. She was as into it as I was. Then she just said she couldn't bring herself to make a commitment to me as something didn't feel right. It really stung. I was falling for her. Intellectually, I know that the fact she ended it is a sign it wasn't right. And I want somebody to be with me for the right reasons. But I can't get her out of my head. I keep thinking I'll never meet anyone like her. And have this ridiculous hope I'll hear from her someday soon and she'll want to give it another shot again. I don't see this is silly, but any idea how I can shake these thoughts and emotions? I feel really stupid talking to my mates about it. Cheers.
So hard, you know, this is so amazingly common to feel like it's taking a long time to move on from a relationship. You know, relationships form the basis of our lives. So when you lose a romantic relationship, especially one that was, you know, kind of important, might have been quite central to your life, you lose that associated meaning, which can mean that people feel like they lose a part of themselves. So, you know, it can be connected to your perception of who you are, your sense of meaning and purpose. So I'd say to this person, work out what it is that you really valued about her, about the relationship and how it made you feel. Something that you can do is write her a letter or many letters that you don't need to send. You definitely do not need to send them, but just allow yourself to say everything that you might be embarrassed to say. Just allow yourself to let it out. Accept that it's okay to grieve and that there isn't a set timeline. You know, just because you've been together for, you know, a week or 6 months doesn't mean that there's a certain amount of time that it takes to feel sad and begin to really feel like you've moved on from that. And then I would also say, if it's really cutting you up, potentially explore with a professional what rejection or abandonment issues this might relate to from your own early life, because that is incredibly common as well. A lot of people have abandonment and rejection stuff from their early life around their relationship with their caregivers, their parents, their early school. They might have been bullied, you know, so there's just a lot going on there which can be very helpful to get some support with.
Okay, but first step, maybe write a letter or get it out on paper or somewhere so you get it out of your system. That would be first point of call, you would say.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. I'm a guy and me and my girlfriend are non-monogamous and I don't care if she has sex with other women. But I get jealous and insecure if she wants to sleep with guys. That's my boundary. So isn't that okay for me to say that she can't? I don't want to sleep with other guys either. Ha, 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 this texter says.
Oh, I'm going to be firm on this one. So that's a rule, not a boundary. I think this person needs to go and check up the difference between a rule and a boundary. And what they're talking about is a highly debated concept called a one penis policy. And this is the idea that a woman is only allowed, quote unquote, to have one penis in her romantic and sexual life. So many couples who first open up their relationships have this, what is actually a very problematic rule. You know, typically one penis policies involve a straight cisgender man and a bisexual cisgender woman. There are exceptions, but overwhelmingly, this gender combination is the trend. And there's actually deep roots here in toxic masculinity, sexism, and even misogyny. Basically, the man wants to be the only penis in his partner's life as a way to control the relationship and his partner. So, you know, it kind of acts as a crutch for insecurity and jealousy instead of working on talking through that jealousy, that insecurity. So I would say, you know, it's also exclusionary. It's saying that sex with women doesn't count, or it isn't the same, or it's not the same amount of threat, whereas the female partner having sex with a man is a threat. So there's a lot to unpack there, and I would say
Unpack it. Lock on there. We're going to take a quick break. We've still loads more to get through on relationships, baby voices in the middle of sex, and squirting. Don't go anywhere. 2FM. We're back in sex therapy. Before the break, we had a lot of your questions and queries over relationships and sex with our resident sex therapist, Rachel Cook. She's on the line, and we still have more to get through, don't we, Rachel?
Oh, we've so many.
Okay, we'll go to this one. How do I stop being so needy in relationships? I'm a woman and quite a few guys I've dated said I was expecting too much when I think I was being really reasonable in asking them to be more reliable, consistent, affectionate and respectful. Should I just start playing hard to get, or are games a bad idea?
Ooh, I love this one. So having needs is a fundamental aspect of all relationships. What is a relationship? What is a relationship other than to have other, you know, the other person meet at least some of our needs? Now, one person is not going to be able to meet all of your needs consistently over time. But that doesn't mean that you don't have needs and preferences around safety, communication, together time, you know, intimacy, reassurance, honesty, affection, you know, empathy, all of these things. And often the words needy, clingy, desperate, crazy are doled out by avoidant people who fear intimacy. Now, sometimes there's simply a mismatch in your personality and needs with this other person. But I would say absolutely start acknowledging and sharing your needs more openly and honestly so that you can discuss and negotiate with your partner. Only date people who can generally meet and fulfill those needs. Don't base the validity of your needs upon someone else's inability to give or their reluctance to give. I would say playing games is a bad idea unless you want drama, which some people do. You know, it may seem to kind of stoke the passion and interest, but it's actually an unsustainable anxiety, you know, that gets created that doesn't allow trust to build and eventually leads to disconnection. I would say the opposite. Don't wait loads of time to respond, you know, just because you're
trying to get.
No, don't play it cool. Don't act nonchalant. Don't ignore the other person. Don't try to seek the other hand up the upper hand. If you like someone, make it clear. Respond to messages when you read them. Explicitly state your interest regularly. Give the other person attention and prompt for some when you want it too. You know, connection and relationships require nurturing. It means making space in your life, making yourself available. That's not the same as saying you abandon everything for the other person and that you should be texting them for 10 hours every day. But, you know, most people feel shame for their needs. Women especially have been conditioned and taught that it's wrong to acknowledge and communicate their needs. So they end up withdrawing and withholding, which leads to resentment, disconnection, contempt, you know. So I think be more upfront and don't date people who've made it clear that they're not into meeting your needs. If they're going to call you needy and clingy, that's not the person for you to date.
Great advice. I can't believe I'm going to say this on air. I really want to learn how to squirt, this texter says. Can Rachel give me some tips? I'd also like to hear her opinion about why it's still so taboo when it's no different from penis ejaculation. Thanks so much. Keep up the brilliant work, boss babes. So, first of all, why is it still so taboo? And what is your opinion on that? And do you have tips?
Well, what do you think, Jen? You said there, I can't believe I'm going to say this on air.
Yeah. That's funny. That is funny. I did say that. I probably feel the same about penis ejaculation just because it's 11:28. But I think it's something that people don't really talk about, is it?
You're right. You know, it's simply unfamiliar to people. You know, first of all, not everybody with a vagina can or does squirt. It's probably about 10 to 15%, something like that. Although more and more people are realizing that they can learn. Not everyone can because, you know, people's bodies are different, but certainly a lot more people can. And it's become more and more of an interest. It's now quite a specific niche in porn. But realistically, there's not really any difference to, like, other than that, you know, it's very related. What actually happens when someone with a vagina squirts is not massively different from when a penis ejaculates. You know, basically the urethral sponge, which is a glandular tissue that produces lubricant, which is also the location of the G-spot, secretes this fluid into the urethra and then it flows back into the bladder. With a big enough and certain kind of stimulation and orgasm, that fluid will come out. This fluid is basically very equivalent to pre-cum in people with penises. So yeah, some tips on how to do it. I mean, some people say they can feel it, others don't. But, you know, basically make sure you're hydrated, but not that you're needing to pee. It does sometimes feel like you're going to pee when you're going to squirt. Some people, it depends, you're going to have to try it probably a few different ways. Some people can squirt most easily on their own with a toy. Some people with oral sex, some people with intercourse as well as kind of manual stimulation. So basically, you want to be going to your G-spot, which is inside the vagina between 1/2 and 2 inches from the entrance on the wall towards your stomach. So the upper wall, use loads of lube, insert a finger into your vagina, curl it upwards towards your belly button. You should feel a patch of flesh similar to the surface of a golf ball or the skin of an orange. Many people find it easiest to use their middle and ring finger. Gently and slowly stimulate that spot. Remember, this isn't a race. Take your time, explore with no expectation, and go from there. You can also watch some videos on it. There's lots of videos on this now, and just have a bit of fun with it, because some people find it absolutely amazing and absolutely love it. And I think we definitely need to continue breaking down the taboo around squirting.
I've been with my current partner for 6 months and I'm seeing a pattern that's come up for me before. I feel like they don't really love me unless they always want to have sex, are able to just know what I want and what I'm thinking and give me unconditional love. That's what relationships are about, right? Or am I expecting a bit much?
Woo, there's a few expectations here. So no one always wants to have sex. People are not machines. Partners are not mind readers. It's not possible for a partner to, you know, sometimes in the honeymoon period of a relationship, you feel like you are merged, you are one, you've never known anyone to get you so much. But usually, you know, those hormones start to die down after a period of time and you realize you're different people with different, you know, qualities and experiences and interests. The other thing is that adult relationships are not unconditional. You know, we like to talk about unconditional love, but realistically, adult romantic relationships are definitionally insecure. They are choices that we make to continue to be with each other. So the ideas that this person has are coming from a mainstream idea of romantic love that we've been sold. So I would say to this person, question what you might have been missing in your own relationship with your parents or caregivers growing up. That's a great one to explore as to why you might be expecting so much from a partner. And reflect on and communicate what you want. Many times, communicate what you want. Sometimes you have to do this over and over. I'm not saying you should stay in a relationship where you feel like you're banging your head against a brick wall the whole time. But, you know, it's very, very common and normal to need to negotiate and communicate with your partner about things that you want, that you don't like. So notice when you shut down, when you stop or withdraw, and explore why, because there is just no way that someone is going to be able to meet all those things that person has that they expect
okay,
there.
Lastly, we need to go to this one. Sometimes I feel disgusted when my partner does little habits like sniffing after he takes a bite of his food or listen to this, baby voices he sometimes uses to talk to me in the middle of sex. It really gives me the ick, and then I don't want him to touch me or even really talk to me for hours or even days after. Am I just being a massive dick here, this texter says.
Oh, we have the infamous ick. You know, some people don't experience it, but for those who do, they'll absolutely know what I'm talking about. It is the sudden cringe-inducing gut feeling of repulsion that people have. You know, maybe it's something the person said, maybe you saw them from a weird angle, but suddenly and often totally involuntarily, everything changes, and someone who a moment ago you felt very sort of, you know, attracted normal to. About or very attracted to, suddenly then you might feel disgusted by them, you know, and then it can set off a chain reaction where now compliments that used to give you sort of, you know, tingles now make you wince. The idea of kissing them sends you into a hole, and it can be impossible to get past it for most people. So I think with the ick, sometimes it signals or clues about the other person that you don't like. Like, let's say they're being a bit dismissive to serving staff in a restaurant and it just really turns you off. It can very often be about a fear of vulnerability and deepening intimacy. So it's kind of like a protective strategy where we start to just feel a bit grossed out because we're getting closer to that person, and on some level that feels threatening to us. It can also be a sign that the honeymoon period is wearing off. Those hormones that made you feel like this was just the best person of all, of all time. You know, you're sort of seeing them in maybe a bit more of a realistic and, you know, human imperfect light. And it can also be a sign that you just need a bit more space. It's very common for this to happen when you've spent a lot of time together. So just decide to part for a bit and have some time to yourself, and hopefully you'll feel better after that.
Lovely. Some great advice as always. Rachel Cook, thank you so much for joining us, and I'll chat to you next week, okay?
See you, Jen.
Bye, love. There we go. She is a psychotherapist. She's a mental health consultant. She is amazing. You can follow Rachel on Instagram at Rachel Jane Cook with an E on the end, and she will be back next week. So if you have a question you would like to put to her, get in touch with the team 24/7. You can mail us jen@rt.ie. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.